When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sometimes something gives you joy in one form, and it changing form doesn't mean you have to lose the joy. Your joy just has to kind of change form too. Maybe not. You know, maybe for Liz, it'll come back. She'll have more time and she'll cook the way she used to cook before kids. That isn't the case for me. Like, it's all transformed. The way I cook, the way I think about food, and what brings me joy in food, but I still have found new ways in food to reclaim joy.
Welcome to Didn't I Just Feed You?
A podcast about feeding kids.
Hey, I'm Megan.
And I'm Stacy. And I'm sitting here in disbelief that it has taken us over 5 years to get to our first official listener Q&A episode. So we recently put the call out in our free community for questions. And in addition to a long thread in the community boards, we also have some voicemails to answer too. You guys, the response was amazing. You guys have a lot of questions. We're definitely not going to be covering them all today, just so you know. We're going to have to do this again and again.
First, but not last of its kind.
That's right. I'm
very excited about this. Speaking of those community boards, we recently upgraded them. We're still using the platform that we have been on for almost 3 years, so nothing has changed as far as how you log in or sign up. It only requires your email, which we never share with anyone. But the boards are now easier to navigate, a little bit organized. Praise. Just go to didn'tijustfeedyou.com/community to sign up.
And as a thank you to our longtime listeners, we made a nice and juicy coupon code for anyone who's interested in joining our supporting community as well. So they're the free message boards. Anyone can join. It's just your email. But then you can also buy a supporting membership, which helps support our free episodes. There are 6 of them every single month. But when you become a supporting member, you also get 2 additional bonus episodes that are exclusive to you, as well as an ad-free stream. So the code for your discount is JUICY. Because it's a juicy discount. It's 25% off a year of membership, whether you pay at the monthly price or the annual price. And it's honestly such a steal. So go to our site, didn'tijustfeedyou.com/community to learn more, to sign up, and don't forget to use the code JUICY when you do.
I think there's no opening banter here. We've got 3 questions to answer. You know us. We gave ourselves our own podcast. We will not be short on the answers. So let's jump in. Are you ready, Billis?
I am ready. So let's start with one that came from our message boards. This is from, okay, we don't know how to say it. It's at LASEAT. It could be Las Eat. It could be La Seat. It could be LAC. We don't know. Tell us. We love you. Thank you for writing in. And they ask, what type of meal or recipes have you been able to delegate to your spouse or children that require very minimal skills? My husband doesn't do a lot of cooking, but now that we have an almost 2-year-old, he's having to get more involved with cooking, and I'd prefer not to have hot dogs and frozen pizza every time.
Okay, listen.
This is a good one.
Stacey's going to have some in defense of hot dogs here.
Yes, I mean, I am, because I love hot dogs, but should I just start?
I think you should. And let's talk about hot dogs, because I have something to say adjacent to it, too.
Well, I'm going to pull back and not talk about the food quite yet, because, you know, we talked about this back when we first launched the podcast. I used to refer to it as my kitchen. And like, I have talked about the fallout from doing that. I was doing it not because I wanted to own cooking for the family. I just did by default. And I ended up reinforcing that. But the kitchen for me, which I know is different than a lot of you listening, is actually my workspace, right? But the idea that we want to delegate some of the tasks on our plate, but then have them done our way, is something that I have come to learn is not just problematic for our partners and for the other people in our home who we're asking for help from, but it also does us a disservice because what it does is it reinforces your ownership of the task in a way that you're trying to not own, but then you're owning it. So I was trying to like say, yeah, get in the kitchen and help me, or like, this is your kitchen too. But then in this way that I didn't even realize and wasn't aware of, I was reinforcing like, this is my space. So I know it's a little different. It's not exactly a one-to-one comparison. And I know why you don't want to eat hot dogs and pizza all the time and why that can feel like, you know, you get into a tricky space where you're like, well, if that's what you're going to cook and that's not what I want to eat, well, then I'm not going to even ask you to help because I know when I ask you to help, I'm just going to get pizza and hot dogs. You know, there's a give and take here. You're wanting to get something from your partner. You're wanting to get more help and more support, but then maybe think about what it is you have to give on. Less control over the task, being okay with eating hot dogs and pizza sometimes. I don't know. So like before we even get into the food piece of it, I know that's a little bit of a hard pill to swallow because it was for me.
Yeah.
But, I really feel like it's a big deal. And it is especially underlined now that I have teenagers.
This is something I know comes up in the book Fair Play, which is really about like making sure that both partners are getting equal rest and that there's a balance of the labor that it takes to run a household. But having a conversation with your partner or with your husband about what is the basic minimum of care, like what is your expectation of what is a dinner, I think is a great starting place before you start trying to pull recipes saying like, hey, I think of dinner as a main and a side dish that's a vegetable, I think could help cut down too on this like just pizza and hot dogs, because that may qualify to them as a meal. And so they're not understanding why you're not satisfied with that being what they decide to cook.
But if it qualifies for them, why can't it then be a meal if they're in charge of the meal? Like, why does your definition, I'm not sure that it's fair. And like sometimes, and I remember there were long seasons of my life when someone would be like, well, that's not fair to Mike. Like he should be able to define what a dinner is when it's his night. And I was like, fair to Mike. Ask me how much I care about that.
Yeah.
And I felt like I stood firm in that ground. And like, that was part of my survival. But what I think I didn't see, which may not be the case for everybody, but I'm just going to say for myself, what I think I didn't see is I thought that was a way of leveling the playing field in a way. And in fact, it just reinforced exactly what I didn't want, to say that I didn't care about what was fair to him or to give him that kind of autonomy. Because what I am saying when I did that, what I was saying was, this is still me. I call the shots here. Yeah. I'm the boss.
Yeah. And maybe I wasn't clear. I don't think it's a thing where you're coming to this conversation and saying, this is what I expect. I think it's an agreement. Like they're early enough in this.
I knew you were saying it was an agreement, but I thought you were saying we get to determine that. Like, I think it has to be this and this.
Yes. Right. But also, what do you think? And when it's coming to feeding our family, what are we agreeing is the basic minimum of care? Did we not have this conversation with someone recently? Was it Rachel Nielsen of 3 and 30 podcast where she was cooking all these meals thinking this was her husband's expectation of what a meal should look like? And then he was like, actually, I just like it when we're all around the table together. It's like sometimes you don't know what you don't know until you start having those conversations about what are the expectations. What are you coming to family dinner with? What is your husband coming to family dinner with? and finding what is the new norm for your very new family. Having a 2-year-old is very new family still.
I agree with you. I also wonder if agreement is necessary. I think it probably depends on the couple and on your style. Because like one thing that I was better at was, and I think it has to do with my background, you know, and I have a master's in child development. And like one of the things that I really believed in coming into parenthood was that it's important for kids to understand, like, yes, there needs to be a unifying culture and point of view on a lot of things around parenting. I'm not suggesting otherwise, but that like kids understand that when they're with grandma, these might be the rules. And when they're with dad, these might be the rules. And when they're with mom, these might be the rules. And that there's some variation. I realize that there's some non-negotiables around values and morals that we need to agree on with our partner and that we need to express to the other caretakers in our children's lives. But like the little nuances, like it's going to be different. Yeah. Like you're going to have to flex. Like dad thinks hot dog is a dinner. Mom doesn't. So dad's in charge tonight. Cool for you kids if you like hot dogs. It's dad's night. Like, I don't know that we need to even agree.
Yeah.
Dad can do it his way on dad night.
And I will say, as a preview and having older kids, one, scrambled eggs and hot dogs are two of the things that my husband
delicious
cooks the
together.
Most. Yes. But also, my kids think his scrambled eggs are better than mine. Yeah. And they look forward to hot dog dinners because I almost never cook them. So there is value to those meals is the other thing that we're trying to hit on here.
Yes. And they get to see everybody like having autonomy and making decisions. It's really good exposure. We don't want the labor and we don't want to raise kids going out in the world to think that like moms are the ones who have to be in charge of the domestic labor. That means not just outsourcing it to be done the way we want it to be done. It means actually letting other people be in charge of the domestic labor so they can show that, like, yes, men are capable and they should be in charge of some of it.
And there are different ways to approach the same labor. So, but we should answer this question.
Yes.
And the first thing that bubbles up for me is hot dogs equal sausages. So if you just want like a one ingredient
I love
upgrade,
that equation. That's like my kind of equation.
And we know how much you love also sausages.
I do.
Which is not an innuendo. It is just an actual culinary fact of Stacey Billis. But so your husband's capable of broiling or boiling or sauteing hot dogs. He can also do sausages. And that is like a one ingredient upgrade to making a dinner that he cooks more satisfying to you. I think you can do the same thing with pizza.
Absolutely. So wait, going back to the sausage thing. Sausage sheet pan meals, sausage, buying him a bunch of pre-cut veggies, throwing them on the sheet pan. Same thing with a saute. You just gloss right over hot dogs and eggs. Let me tell you something.
It is not for me, y'all.
Together, it is delicious. Saute, like cut up the hot dog, saute it, and then a little onion. It's so good. Same with sausage. Also, just saute with sausage and sauerkraut. That's cabbage. It's pickly. It has tons of flavor. Just cut up a sausage, pan fry it so it gets nice and crispy. Add the sauerkraut until the whole thing warms with some crusty bread. Great.
I love that so much.
Okay. Pizza is another thing that he can riff off of, right?
Right. So it could be frozen pizzas that you're adding veggies and proteins to make them more delicious. You, Stacey, have mentioned several times like buying the Trader Joe's flatbreads and using some of the shortcut ingredients available at Trader Joe's to make birria pizzas. Or you could do something where it's like Alfredo sauce and spinach and artichokes and some mozzarella and fontina on top. There's lots of riffs there.
Also, one of my favorite tricks used to be to put an egg on a frozen pizza. So you put it on a pan, you put it in the oven, and then about, 7 minutes before it's done, just pull it out carefully and crack a couple of eggs on top. I know this might not be a thing that like the average picky younger kid might like, and they might think it's weird, but it's a great way to just add some like protein and nutritional heft. And also like a runny yolk on pizza is so tasty.
I don't want to get like too caught up in a bunch of recipe suggestions, I do want to recommend some other strategies. One that's worked really well for us, especially in this like autonomy and I'm releasing control, is to sometimes do meal kits. This could look like using a HelloFresh or a Green Chef's or whatever delivery to your house for especially busy weeks. Or I know some grocery stores, like I've seen them at my Publix, I've seen them at Target, will sell like a bag that you grab and it has a recipe card stapled to it and you can grab that. And then your husband or partner like has the decision made for them, but like all the ingredients are parceled out and there's a recipe so they don't have to ask you questions. Because another thing here is like, does your partner or husband have the same cooking skills as you, or is there going to be a learning curve where you're having to teach them in order for them to help you a little bit in the future?
Yeah. Speaking of strategies, frozen ingredients are huge for me. So we've been doing a lot of talking recently, especially in a recent subscriber episode, about the taquito bake. It's a shortcut taquito bake, but you just basically put a bunch of frozen taquitos in a baking dish, cover with enchilada sauce and shredded cheese. But a whole bunch of meals like that. I know everybody goes to Trader Joe's for meals, but sometimes I found it depends on how old your kids are and your family is. A bag of orange chicken doesn't cut it for my family. So I end up getting like two bags of frozen chicken and then broccoli. Like sometimes it can get pricey. But I would say definitely, depending on your budget, Trader Joe's. And then in general, thinking about very easy ways to use things in your freezer. And we have a whole episode on what to keep in your freezer for easy weeknight meals. Dumplings, taquitos, burritos, you know, stuff that you're going to also find, nuggets that you're going to find next to the frozen pizza aisle that just like, you know, shortcut dinner in a major way.
Two book recommendations. Katie Morford's Prep, which is an essential college cookbook, but the recipes are really simple. They're straightforward. They teach basic cooking techniques. So this is good for husbands and partners or older kids / teens, tweens. And then I was cooking from it so much in 2023, Jenna Helwig's Bare Minimum Dinners, which promises to either be bare minimum on ingredients or time or dishes. So that could be a really great book to gift or give or borrow from the library for your husband or partner or teen or tween to look at and pull some recipes from.
Yes. And I want to say one last thing. Don't make assumptions about the amount of work that you have to do up front. Like part of the conversation that we said you should be having in the beginning, where you're like getting on the same page about like, are you guys going to have a shared expectation about what dinner is? Or is it going to be that mom dinners are going to look different than other mom dinners or dad's dinners, whatever the case might be? Because one thing that I was doing during the pandemic when I really needed Mike's support in the kitchen was that I kept picking recipes that I thought were so dead easy. And he finally was like, I don't want to cook recipes that you've picked for me because you think they're easy, and I understand why you think they're easy. And like, I see that they are easy, but they're not, like, it's not registering in my mind the way it's registering in your mind. And he ended up wanting me to just help give him direction on where to look. And then he picked the recipes himself. And then he was much more motivated and did a much better job of helping cook when he figured out what he was going to make instead of having me meal plan something easy and assign it to him.
Yeah. Because then he's excited to cook it and feed it to you. Yeah.
And then, you know, ketchup chicken went down in infamy. He made ketchup chicken one night. Everyone, me and the boys, it literally came up last night. And he was like, oh my God, okay, I got it.
What the hell is ketchup chicken?
Okay, ketchup. He will defend it because it's a recipe by Mark Bittman. Okay. I'm going to share it.
But everyone has flops. Mark Bittman.
He literally made it. And we sat down and Isaac was like, took a bite and was like, is this chicken? And Oliver was like, in ketchup? It was just a bunch of chicken sauteed in a bunch of ketchup. And it was gross.
Wait, is that literally what it is?
Yes. No, I'm serious. Mark Bittman ketchup chicken. I'll put it in the show notes. It was a flop.
It's literally on New York Times cooking. No. No.
Mike was like, stop making fun of me. It's been years. It's literally a New York Times recipe. I can't tell you that he did it right. I don't know.
In Mike's defense, the picture is good.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's really kind of like sweet and sour or like sticky chicken. Like, I want to eat that.
It does make me wonder if he did it wrong. I'm sorry, Mike. I don't know, because it does look good. It's Mark Bittman. It's on the New York Times. They must have cross-tested it.
Now I have to try it. Oh, no. Okay. We got to move on to the next
anyway,
question.
So we hope that's helpful.
Stacey, I don't know about you, but I've been in a major spring cleaning mode, including purging and organizing my closet. I'm putting away winter sweaters and donating things that don't work for me anymore. But I'm so excited to be pulling out some of my favorite items from Quince to put back into rotation.
Totally. I love the pieces that I bought from Quince last year, too. And neither of us should really be surprised. We love Quince for their quality. And by partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
Which means I can actually add some pieces back to my closet after my spring clear out. I love the linen pants and top I got last season so much, but my next purchase is one of Quince's gorgeous 100% washable silk skirts.
Oh, that's so pretty. And the best part? All Quince items from silk to 14 karat gold are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's why I snagged my favorite oversized cashmere boyfriend cardigan from Quince instead of any other brand.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/DIJFY for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You, to get free shipping and 365-day returns. We know you're seeing all the Mother's Day gift guides everywhere. And while we usually do some Didn't I Just Feed You version, this year we have the one perfect Mother's Day gift that works for everyone. Even our last-minute shoppers, MyLifeInABook.com.
MyLifeInABook.com is a unique service that turns the life stories of people you love into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your gift recipient a question via email. These can be pre-written questions that they provide, or you can customize the questions the way that I did for my mom. Your recipient can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book.
I'm really excited to be creating a book with my own mom this year, and I can't wait to hear some of her childhood memories, what it was really like raising three kids as a single mother, and how she's enjoyed becoming a grandmother, too.
And when the book is done, you'll have a beautiful keepsake for her and for you too. You can even choose to have an audiobook created from the recordings. It's easy to sign up and the process is automated, so you don't have to worry about missing a week.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code DIJFY at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code DIJFY for 10% off today. This episode of Didn't I Just Feed You is sponsored by By Heart. Longtime listeners know that Stacey and I both struggled with infant feeding stages with all our kids. Breastfeeding was hard, and choosing a formula was, well, also hard. We're thrilled to be working with By Heart, an infant nutrition company on a mission to make the best formula in the world. Not only is By Heart an easy-to-digest formula, their formula is also clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit-up, and softer poops versus leading infant formula. By Heart has their own patented protein blend that includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey to casein ratio, just like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system. Curious about By Heart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code DIJFY for a limited time. That's byheart.com/podcast and code DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You? Additional terms and conditions apply.
Once upon a time, the Greek myths helped us understand the world and our place within it. They still do.
Zeus, we have finished your weapons.
Thunderbolts, just as I saw in my vision.
Whoa!
That almost hit me.
Need to improve my aim.
To not hit me, right?
Live from Mount Olympus spins these ancient tales for today's tweens and their grown-ups.
I, Zeus, king of the gods, command that you listen to Live from Mount Olympus wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, next question is a voice memo from our friend Liz. Liz is an OG listener.
I love Liz.
Let's hear what Liz wants to hear from us.
Hi, Stacey and Megan. My question for you is this. How do we make time for ourselves in the kitchen? I really love to cook and try new recipes, but I also have three little kids at home, so the days of project cooking have long gone, and I'm afraid that there'll be a while before I can get into it again. And if I do manage to squeeze something fun in, the chances of it being well received are slim to none. So how do I find the joy that I've lost in the kitchen? I miss it, and I would love to get it back.
Ooh, this one gives me goosebumps. Maybe it's my allergies, but I'm a little like teary about it.
Yeah.
Because it's so real, right? Like,
yeah, you're really going to cry.
I really might cry.
Yeah.
Because there really was such a time where I felt like I lost myself in motherhood. And so much of my identity is about being a food person and being a person who cooks for joy, for pleasure, for sharing love with other people. And so this is really challenging. And my first blush answer is like, well, it takes some time.
Yeah.
And that's hard to hear when you're like in the middle of it, I think. So I'm wondering, do you have any straight advice? Maybe that will help me process and have some good insight for Liz.
No. I was hoping you were going to have something like really genius to say, because you often do. But I was like, oh, I think you need to just go through this. Like, you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You just need to go through it. I'm going to say this as a hopeful thing, and I hope it comes across as hopeful. But even now with older kids, where I've reclaimed so much of my time, it's been so long that I have even wondered if, like, I'm not a food person the same way that I used to be a food person. Now, for us, it's a little bit different, because now we've also dedicated so much of our work time to thinking about quick and easy and how do we support moms who are in this phase. So that's become so much of my work, and then that becomes so much of my life, and then that becomes so much of how I think about, you know, it's a big ass feedback loop. And like, I still don't cook the way I used to cook. I did for the first time in ages just recently that there's another mom I know who was born and raised in Iran and has lived here for many years now and is an amazing cook and really cooks the way I remember my grandmother cooking. Acts like these huge elaborate meals is like nothing, and is like cooking all the time and is always having like 100 people over to her house for Persian New Year, and like acts like it's nothing and runs a major educational program that's one of the only Persian cultural education extensions in the entire New York City, has like 800 kids in her program. It's crazy. And she just does it with such grace and ease. And she at one time was like, let's have a dinner party. And I was like, yeah, Greek and Persian. I love Persian food. You love Greek food. And it literally took us forever to plan it because it just felt like a lot to me. And like, I would reach out to her every once in a while. We'd run into each other and she was like, oh, I just had 50 people over my house the other day. And I'm like, God damn, like, what is going on? And we finally, after at least a year and a half of talking about it, had the dinner party recently. And it was such a beautiful thing. And that was the first time in so long that I cooked the way I used to cook. And we had 30 people at the house with kids, like eating food. And it was so joyful, but it really was different. I have been changed by these years. And so I think that not only going through it, but kind of embracing it and understanding that sometimes something gives you joy in one form, and it changing form doesn't mean you have to lose the joy. Your joy just has to kind of change form too. Maybe not. You know, maybe for Liz, it'll come back. She'll have more time and she'll cook the way she used to cook before kids. That isn't the case for me. Like, it's all transformed. The way I cook, the way I think about food, and what brings me joy in food. But I still have found new ways in food to reclaim joy.
Yeah. I love that so much. And a thing that bubbles up is this idea of cooking for other people. So if you feel like your family doesn't appreciate it, can you start a cookbook club with other parents or other moms, with your friends, and each cook for each other? So it's not an overwhelming, you're not having to cook a whole meal, but you're cooking one dish to share with them. Can you invite friends and neighbors over in a casual way that doesn't stress you out and you can cook for them? Because really, like, our families may never appreciate the kind of cooking that we do for them. And this idea of the joy changing form is really powerful, because I think of the things that bring me food joy now, which are not necessarily project cooking always. Although, you know, I love to bake, and being able to like get back into sourdough has been a thing for me this year. And my family appreciates that sort of project cooking. But is the form of joy going to eat out, having a different dining out experience? Is it getting to do a different kind of grocery shop, whether it's like your Asian market or the super tiny little specialty food store in your community, and buying a new to you tool or a new to you ingredient? Is it having solo meals out? I know people are very intimidated by that, but it is one of my most favorite things.
I love it too. Sitting at the bar at a great restaurant
by yourself,
ordering a meal,
eat exactly what you want.
I love it.
There's no other input, like your partner or your kids or whatever being critical of the food. You just get to enjoy it for yourself.
And I'm going to say something that might seem a little like out there, but the fact that everyone's on their phone all the time, it's not weird anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, grab an audiobook or put your Kindle book on your phone or bring your Kindle with you. It's like not weird.
Yeah. It's not weird.
Because you're not
all
just sitting there like waiting to have strike up conversation or like twiddling your thumbs while you wait for your food these days.
Yeah. So like phone, book, I will bring my planner / journal with me. I'll doodle. Like, there's lots of things. Like, are you a knitter? Bring your knitting with you. Like, you can do something so you feel less awkward, but it's actually like no one at the restaurant cares.
Literally
at all.
No one.
And then I think this is really maybe personal for me, but being a planner person and keeping a journal, I'm not saying you should document every meal that you make for your family, but I think if you started documenting more of it, if you're not already, you might find that you have more dinner wins than you think you do, and that you're actually like having some joys that maybe you don't feel. They're not like this big, you didn't make a souffle, like have this challenging cooking project thing, but like you did try new recipes or you did try new ingredients, and maybe three of your four people in your family enjoyed it. And so that is a dinner win. I do a thing at the end of each month in my journal planner. I've called it very many things. Some people call it like a report, or some people call it like their currently list. And report stands for something like what you're reading, eating, something you're obsessed with. I'm not going to remember all of them. But I find a lot of threads in that. Like, oh, I watched The Bear and that was really enjoyable. Or my son and I watched the Great British Bake Off Professionals thing recently. Or I became obsessed with ranking my favorite Olipops or my favorite potato chip. And like tracking those things has been a way to see the joy that already exists.
I love that so much. I think that's really beautiful. A personal thing for me, since you shared one for you that might resonate with people, is that I've always very much come from a place of doing what I want around food, partly because it's the way I grew up. Like, no one, you know, when you grow up in not all, but many immigrant households, like, no one's thinking about like kids' food or making sure that like, oh, if we have octopus on the table and Stacey's weirded out by octopus, let's make sure we have something else. Like, no one gave a flying you know what about that. So if I didn't want octopus, I could go away and not eat for dinner. So I feel like it served me well in terms of building my palate and becoming interested in food. And it doesn't mean that I enjoyed everything that my mom and my grandmother made. But, you know, you said, like, can you entertain and cook for your friends in a manageable way? Yes. Because I don't want you to be stressed out. But also,
If you really like entertaining and it is a lot of work, what else can you pull off your list so that you can do it the way you used to do it? Sometimes, even if you learn that you don't want to keep doing it, tapping into your old self with a new lens is very grounding. It is for me. Like, I remember in a lot of those early years of motherhood, feeling like old Stacy was like floating and gone and I didn't know where she is, was very discombobulating. And it was grounding to me to tap into who she was. And then even if that meant to say, oh, and she's not that anymore, there was something about the clarity of that that felt better to me than just like her being out of reach. Right? So like if entertaining or project cooking is your jam and you want to see how it feels to try that on again, just know that like something else has to give because your time is different now. Your life is different now. And make space for it every once in a while. And even though it makes you uncomfortable, order dinner 3 nights in a row or ask your husband to make hot dogs and frozen pizza. Do you know what I mean? And
like, I absolutely
try it
yes.
on and see where it takes you.
It's an exchange of time. And I am also just going to add that I spent a lot of time, and this was like during the hardest part of like being in Boise and feeling like I was really struggling with my mental health, trying to be the person I was before kids or trying to be the person I was in the early years of parenting. And it took me many years and much strife to realize that just like we want our kids to grow and learn and evolve, mm-hmm. we are also supposed to do that. So like Stacy's saying, if you try on some of your old personality, your old cooking projects, your old joys, and they don't fit anymore, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That just means that you have grown and you have changed. And that means the joy changes form.
Yeah, totally. And then one little bit of practical advice before we move on, which is that, you know, something that I've been trying to be more mindful of with things that I want to commit to is creating practice around them and not always relying on motivation, because I just don't think that we always realize, even in easier, quote unquote, easier seasons of parenting and life, what we do as parents is so exhausting, so exhausting. Like even just the way our minds are constantly running, thinking about the well-being of two other people whose bodies we don't embody. You know what I mean? Making sure like, are they okay? Are they happy? You know, even when there's nothing being called for in terms of our like time or work that we have to do physically, it's exhausting. And so if you find something that works and is bringing you joy, how can you turn it into a practice? So that you can make sure that on some kind of regular cadence that doesn't have to be frequent necessarily, but you know is there and will be there for you, you can keep coming back to it and make sure you get a dose, because feeding yourself in your joy is absolutely essential to your kids being happy, healthy, and well-balanced too.
Woo! All right, Liz, you brought us to the brink. We almost both cried in this episode. Was not expecting that.
I hope that was helpful.
I think
Liz is in our community. She'll tell us.
She'll be Liz, like, y'all, yeah, y'all missed Liz. It or y'all got it.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Exactly. And then if not, we'll do a follow-up in the next Q&A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Once upon a time, the Greek myths helped us understand the world and our place within it. They still do.
Zeus, we have finished your weapons.
Thunderbolts, just as I saw in my vision.
Whoa, that almost hit me.
Need to improve my aim.
To not hit me, right?
Live from Mount Olympus spins these ancient tales for today's tweens and their grown-ups.
I, Zeus, King of the Gods, command that you listen to Live from Mount Olympus wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, one more.
This last voicemail is from Kirsten.
Hey, Stacy and Megan. My name is Kirsten. I live in Wisconsin, and I have two boys, an almost 8-year-old and a 5.5-year-old. And the 5.5-year-old has really become picky lately. He'll eat chicken nuggets, but not spatchcocked roasted chicken. And sometimes he'll eat mashed potatoes with the gravy, and sometimes he won't. But just in general, has become very picky following some bowel issues that he had. So we'd love some tips and tricks for foods I can reintroduce to him to get him to enjoy food again, because he was definitely my non-picky eater for the majority of his life. Thank you.
Okay, Stacy.
Oh my God, it's another one.
Child psychology major here. I don't know why did I call you a major. What advice do you have?
It's so funny. This like episode is like bizarre. I thought we were going to talk about like sauteing, or like hard boiling a perfect egg.
Not this time. Maybe next time.
Okay. This is another kind of deep one. That's a little bit about acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's even more research. I was talking with someone recently who's writing a book on how trauma impacts our nervous system and all different aspects of our nervous system. And I'm not going to say that what Kirsten's child went through is traumatic, but on a scale of trauma, it's very low, but it could be that their body processed it as trauma because you don't know what's going on. Like, you normally have regular bowel movements and all of a sudden you don't. Any of us who've ever had been constipated knows that it can be very deeply physically uncomfortable. And actually, sorry, we're going to talk poop here for a minute. A little bit stressful because there's that feeling of like, I have to go. And it's right there and it's not coming out and it can feel nerve-wracking to leave the toilet, especially if you're a kid and have never experienced this before and don't know what's going on and maybe don't even know how to articulate to your parent so that they can get you what you need. And it's ongoing. That is a hard experience.
also relative to their 5.5-year-old life, right? Like,
yes.
If you haven't ever experienced that before, it's really scary. No one can prepare you for that. I remember one of the first times of my kids getting sick and vomiting, they were like, what is happening?
Yeah.
I'm not in control of my body.
Yes.
That's very scary. And you mentioned constipation, but it could also be the opposite, where they're feeling like they have to rush, they're having accidents. So then it's like also shame because their body's not working the way that they have been taught it should or expect it to. So like, that's a lot for a 5.5-year-old to deal with.
Right. And so I wanted to be careful about how I say it, because like, I don't think this is scarring. Like, you know, that anything like major and horrible has happened. This is how our bodies work. Like, we have to learn it at some point. But being gentle and going slow and letting your kid just sort of be in the aftermath of that, I think is very, very important. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a child psychologist. I'm not a nutritionist. Like, if it's to the point where you think that there might be an eating issue or some disordered thinking or some anxiety with a capital A around food, or if you think they're not getting enough nutrients, there are boundaries around this advice. And beyond those boundaries, Megan and I are not qualified. You should definitely speak to your pediatrician, or if you have access to a therapist, a feeding therapist. But if this is just like it's taking them a long time to rebound because they're gun shy, let it be. And I would really, really suggest that you take their lead. I know from firsthand, not from any kind of trauma, but having an adventurous eater who then is not adventurous can be so frustrating. Isaac is like that, just like as a person he's become. He was my kid who ate everything. I was like, look at me. I'm a food writer and I did everything right when he was young. And, you know, look. Like, that is no longer the case. Also, in the middle of it, in the early tween years, he was dairy-free because he was having GI issues that I am allowed to share. I share this with consent, that we've now tracked back not to GI issues, but anxiety. So there were a lot of years there where his diet was really limited. It's hard. It's disappointing. It makes it more of a challenge for us, you know, and I don't know that it will come around. You know, I want to promise that because I think it's totally possible that it will come around and this will resolve itself on its own and your kid will go back to being an adventurous eater. Also, it maybe won't. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. But I think one is just writing your kid the permission slip this time instead of yourself and giving your kid a little bit of grace. And also making sure that they feel like they have some sense of control, because I imagine that, you know, having digestive issues can often feel like you're the one who's out of control, like you're not in control of your body. And then having someone impose control of like, now let's make sure that you're like eating all these foods again, can add to the trauma more than help it.
Yeah, I think that's so great. I want to add another viewpoint here, which is I think the trauma is probably very real. But I think as parents, sometimes we want to find a responsibility or blame for behavior that we don't love. And the reality is also that our great eaters in like toddlerhood find their autonomy as they get into kindergarten and first grade, and their tastes may just change.
Yeah, like would this have happened anyway?
I'm asking that question.
Yeah.
And also that was my experience with both my kids. I didn't have kids who had digestive issues at some point, but my daughter who loved salmon and sweet potatoes up until she was like in first grade would not touch either of those things now.
Yeah.
And nothing traumatic, save for like, you know, a pandemic and moving twice, which are not related to food, happened around her diet or her digestion. That is simply her growing up and discovering her own boundaries, figuring out what she likes and doesn't like. And I think I would circle back to the selective eater advice that we've given in the past in previous episodes.
That's what I was going to say. I'm so glad that you brought that up. Let's go over some basics because I do think they apply and can help here.
Yeah. Things as simple as you just continue to serve the things that you're going to serve. You make sure that there are some safe foods on the table for them so that they do get filled up at mealtimes. You remember that they are allowed to not mm-hmm. like things. What else would you add?
You go slow. And I know that that can impact your energy and your budget especially. So I would definitely stick with things that if they don't eat it, you're willing to eat it, whether as leftovers or for lunch the next day, because you can't expect, you know, I know it's hard advice to give to say like, they need to try it 12 times. Like a lot of people can't afford to buy something that their kid won't eat and serve it 12 times over. So, you know, I understand that aspect of it, but if you have the ability to go slow, you really probably should. It will help. And then start by building up on foods that they already know and like. So if they like pasta, can you try rice noodles or soba noodles? And like, it depends how picky they are. You might even just put their regular butter or red sauce on the rice noodles, which I know doesn't sound appealing to us, but you can just cook rice noodles for the whole family, make Vietnamese style cold noodle salad for everybody else, and then just put like their favorite jarred sauce on it. They get exposure. They see what you're eating. They can smell it. They can look at it. They just eat it with their sauce and they try it out. And then you can kind of inch them that way into new flavors. But it often helps to start with some base ingredients that they already know and accept and expand from there instead of springing entirely new things on them.
Yes. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but sort of this idea that like you are responsible for what food makes it onto the table and you get to set boundaries around like what time meals are and like what you're cooking. But ultimately, if they don't eat everything on the table, that's okay. A strategy that's also worked well for us during some of the more picky seasons for both of my kids has been like, if the chicken nugget or the pizza becomes the obsession, we do serve it once a week, but we set like, oh, tonight we're having the roasted chicken or the spatchcock chicken. But, you know, on Thursday, I've planned for us to have your nuggets. So like you're hearing what their likes and dislikes are and you're taking them to account so they feel seen and heard, but you're not catering to it on every single evening.
Yeah. And I think giving them a little bit of insight into what's coming up can be really helpful too, because so much of what kids experience is just like dinner plopped down on the table. And then there's all kinds of expectations that we have about what their reaction and their behavior should be, that they should be happy that we made it for them and that they should eat it all. But like it came out of nowhere. You know, so maybe having a meal plan, depending on how old your kids are. I know here we're talking about a 5-year-old, but yeah, like even a 5-year-old, what do you want for dinner on Saturday? Saturday's your night, you know, so that they can get excited about something. A couple of other things. One is like, don't use lunch or breakfast. Like pick one meal. If dinner's what makes most sense logistically and for you, it can be dinner, even though kids, especially as young as 5 years old, are also like, they're most tired at dinner.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that can be hard. Like maybe if you can do some adventure eating at breakfast time, or like if they're not quite in full-time school yet at snack or lunchtime, or maybe save it for the weekend at lunchtime. But like make the rest of the meals just what they like and like don't be constantly pressing the issue. And my last bit of advice is that like, here we did. We just spent all these minutes going through giving advice on how to quote unquote fix, solve, help kids inch away from picky eating. But let's all just take a moment and stop and ask ourselves, what is the big deal? Why have we valued adventurous eating so much? There's something moral in there that like, why do we care so much? I don't know if Kirsten feels like her kid isn't getting a healthy diet, but like a lot of times when you ask parents whose kids are selective eaters what their kids are eating, they're like, you know, they'll only eat like cheese and rice and chicken. Chicken's a lean protein.
Like all cheese those things is are a good, great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. It'd be great to have some more fruit and vegetable in there. But like, that's not that bad.
It's really not. And we're all playing a long game here.
Yeah.
We all are. Us food experts, we're playing this long game of trying to give our kids a healthy relationship to food, which is more important than them liking certain ingredients or them having an adventurous palate.
Yeah.
I mean, Stacey can speak to this a little more personally because she has a husband who grew up being a very selective eater. And now he's very adventurous. Yeah. So put whatever weight on being adventurous you want to, but decide if that's coming from an outside source or if that's really important to you.
Yeah. Is that one of your shoulds, which is one of Rachel Nielsen's phrases that we spoke to her about in our episode on decluttering feeding your family? Like, is this something that you can declutter? And maybe if not completely, just your approach to it too. Consider all of our advice and our tips and then kind of declutter it and figure out what makes sense for you so that it's not overwhelming for you or for your kid.
Stacey, this was so much fun.
I love it.
Even if we almost cried.
Everything. Isn't that funny? We haven't had an emotional episode like that in a long time. We went through a range of emotions,
right? We're like a little spicy about partners cooking for us. We almost cried. We got a little hard and fast here. Okay. This whole episode was inspired by our community, by listeners like you joining our free community boards and asking questions or leaving us a voicemail. So before we sign off, we have to invite you to our Didn't I Just Feed You listeners community. Free members get direct access to us as well as our hive mind of busy home cooks, plus access to our recipe archive, shopping guides, and helpful checklists.
And hey, if you want to do a little bit more to support Didn't I Just Feed You, we would love that. We have supporting community options, and it's a way that you can financially support these free public episodes. But also, in return, you get cool stuff. You get an ad-free stream of every single episode, so like every single one. And then you also get two additional exclusive bonus episodes every month. So instead of the 6 episodes that you currently have access to, you get 8. It's amazing. Find out more about becoming a supporting member at didntijustfeedyou.com/community. And don't forget that code, JUICY, gets you 25% off either an annual or a monthly membership for an entire year. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram where we are at Didn't I Just Feed You. A huge thank you to our producer, Samantha Gatzik. I'm Stacey.
And I'm Megan. Stay sane and well-fed until next week.
Be sure to subscribe to Didn't I Just Feed You wherever you're listening. And don't forget to rate and review.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.